Hey guys, what's up? This is Sol. First off, I'd like to thank everyone who's been supporting Artist Talk for the first season on streaming platforms. It truly means so much to me from the bottom of my heart, and I'm excited to get the second season out to you guys. Before we get started, I just wanted to let you all know that from now on, I'll be doing a more casually recorded introduction to the episodes moving forward. Reason why is that it's really important to me that Artist Talk is as candid of a podcast series as it can be, and I think that the style of intro that I did in the first season turned out to be a little bit too scripted. So I just wanted to let you all know about that before moving forward. Anyways, so onto this first episode, I had some huge talent on with me to kick off the first episode of this second season. I'm sure you all have heard of them in the house scene, Wednesday and Birthday Party. Wednesday being part owner of her own record label 40 Ounce Cult with her brother Dak Janiels, and Birthday Party were about to release a collab that they have with Adventure Club when we did this episode. We had a lot to talk about, so I don't want to delay any further, so let's get into it.
Yo, what's up?
How are ya?
What's up, everybody?
Shout out to everyone in chat.
Yes. Hey, guys.
Packed out.
Oh, we got Dread MC in the chat.
Yeah, that's the homie. Dread, you know, Dread was on the first episode, so he's been a long-time supporter.
That's lit. We have a really, really nasty D&B track in the works with him for our EP. It's actually, like, completely done right now, so.
Damn.
Stay tuned. Right.
Well, I also have a really cool tune in the works with
Well, it wasn't a competition, but I bet yours is better, though.
Oh, my God, no.
Yeah, we love it. We love it. We've built a community around this IG Live thing that we do. So it's all the regulars in here, and I'm so happy to have that community because it's like we're all supporting each other because a lot of us are artists. So
100%. That's what it's all about, right? That's what it's all about. That's exactly what makes this scene so special. I feel like you know, versus other genres, I feel like there's a level of accessibility with electronic music artists, you know, from us running our own socials to doing lives like this. I think it makes it really special. And I think there's a, you know, I think it gets rid of that like gatekeeping culture in a sense where you can be open and ask people because, you know, even if we all have the same tools, like what I'm doing is different than what they're doing, what you're doing. And so I love it.
Yeah,
exactly. It's special. Go ahead.
Like one of our managers does social media management for some like bigger artists. And I overheard him on like a pitch call to some artist like team. And they were like, well, so basically the story that we want to craft is why, you know, how do you feel like this person who is like a large rapper that is like, you know, very, very larger than life, how do you convey to people that you want to be best friends with these people? Because that like desire for like personal connection, that personability is going to connect with people so much better than, you know, Lambos and money, you know, like,
100%.
So like the, anything that you can do that's like a real human connection is like really massive. I was just having, I had like a lesson that I was given to an artist homie, and we were talking about like branding and stuff. And I'm like, literally the number one thing that you can do is just interact with everyone that interacts with you. Cause that's how you get conversation going. And that's how, like, you know, if you talk to someone and you just like ignore them, they just ignore you. You're not going to want to talk to them anymore. You're not going to want to interact with that person anymore.
And you're certainly not going to want to listen to their music or go to their show or buy their merch. You know, it's a trickle effect for sure.
So I'm going to try something different starting season two. If anyone has questions, especially about 40 Ounce or you guys' releases, I want everyone to put it in the little question box. And then in the last like 15 minutes, we'll go to those questions, specifically answering questions. We tried to do that before, didn't get too many questions. I'm going to try it again on this episode and we'll see what happens.
No one wants to ask this question.
I'm
just kidding.
Listen. I have.
Is it because they're shy or because they're not interesting?
No. Normally, my questions, I have a list of questions that I'm pretty proud of. I'm not going to lie. Like, my favorite thing is asking artists questions that, like, make you guys think a lot. And like,
I don't like doing that.
Please don't ask me how we got our name again. Like, I'm so sick of that interview question.
I have a question.
I will come out there and ask Taylor.
Nothing. I was going to ask how they got their name. But now it's always funny, so I'm just going to go away.
So I'll start out with one of the classic ones that I've asked. And this can be loaded, so, and just go into as much detail as you want. Why do you guys make music?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because it makes me happy.
I feel like music is like the only real thing that I have to give to the world that I can give better than, like, you know, other people, like the general populace. That's not like better than most artists, but like general population baseline. I think like music is the one thing that I have something to offer, and I don't have that to offer for like any other thing that you could possibly think to give to the world, except for like teaching about music, which is still music anyways. But like, yeah, it's just like the only thing that I feel like I'll be able to have a lasting positive effect with, you know, give a little bit of a positive message, enjoy people or encourage people to, you know, enjoy themselves sometime and, you know,
just not really put positivity into the world instead of just being a neutral influence.
I think for me, you know, music is, I always tie my life experiences to songs, right? I'm a very visual person when it comes to music. And so I think for me, at any point, high or low in my life, music was there for me. And so if I can create and have music that's there for someone else in that way, is really incredible and really special. And that's what keeps me doing it, even when it's hard or, you know, you have writer's block or this or that, or even if there's something personal going on in my life, you know, just knowing that, like, that experience going into my music can help someone else in that situation just keeps me going.
Yeah. I know that we talked, me and Taylor talked like before about your Heartbreak House EP, which is like literally around telling a story of your breakup, which was significant. Yeah. And like, you know, seeing those, it's all things that people can apply to their own lives. It's not like, you know, obviously you can share some things that are like kind of personal, but it's not like 100%. So specific and so personal that
it's
like people
smokers closer specific, but it's like
I don't know. I've never, you know, done it in the backseat of a Rover in Denver, whatever the things are, but like I'll belt the fuck out of those lyrics every time I hear it. It's catchy. It sounds good.
But you know what? That type of like, even with that song in particular, like if you think about it, that's like a very, for me, like a very like young, like college first love experience. So even if you're not in the Rover, I think that everyone kind of has that one moment or like was with that person like in a summer or on winter break or whatever that they or like can relate to, right? Like, oh, I remember that, like when it was just actually really fun and we didn't have to worry about like bills or school or this, you know. So you know, any song, light or not, you know, I think can bring you back to a personal situation. And that's what's really cool about it. That's what it's up for interpretation, right? Like, you know, what it's going to mean to me may be a different application for you and a different application for you.
I love your answers because, like, my personal answer to that is kind of similar to what Brian said, that I feel like I'm giving to society with my music and that it brings people together. That's what my whole brand's about, bringing people together through music. And that ties into this podcast as well. Just bringing together people like through music, having them in the moment. And like, it goes past genres. Cause if you're going to a concert, you're all there for the same reason. You're there for the music. You know what I mean? So like being musicians, I feel like has a much deeper meaning than I feel like society even gives it.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I think even creativity as a whole, I think when the world is in, you know, you look at like disarray or a mess, and then comes this like really crazy renaissance and like creative period. You know, you look at the Great Depression, and then you have the Roaring Twenties. And, you know, even with us going through the pandemic, it's been really exciting to see what new ideas and creativity kind of spawned out of that, even though that was like a really hard going on 2 years for everyone, you know? And right. So, and I think with music, and again, going back to like accessibility, you're kind of able to follow your favorite artist's journey in that sense, which is really cool.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
We've got some chats or some questions in the chat. I know you said that you're going to try and save them for 15 minutes, but you know, people might need to be moving on. Maybe we do a couple of them.
If you want to, I can only leave it for a section, but if we have a break in conversation, we can get to some of them. We can do the ones here. Price, I know you know Price Taylor.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys know Price.
We're acquainted virtually.
He's amazing. Right. He's 40 Ounce Gang. We love him.
You're... So,
he just wants
who
to
is
know
the real Bijou? Wednesday or Bijou?
It's me. I'm just kidding. No, he's one of my best friends, and being able to be on tour with him has been really exciting and fun. So, you know, we always joke before the set that we're going to just rinse each other's music. It'll be either a Wednesday or a Bijou tribute set, depending on who's first.
There we go.
And then when it gets down to the back-to-back, we can play everything else we're going to play. So he's the best. Shout out Bijou. Shout out D&D Rex. They're another label if you guys aren't familiar with them. Putting out really, really great bass house, G house.
Yeah.
Really pretty multi-genre. So check out that label.
Yeah, I love D&D. Mm-hmm. Really great tracks out in there.
Yeah, they're great.
Okay. So we haven't talked about 40 Ounce yet.
Yes.
I want to know, I have a couple label-specific questions.
Cool.
When you made 40 Ounce, was Tanner in the picture from day one?
Yes. Yeah, so actually Tanner, okay. So Tanner and our best friend Hami, who is a former professional skateboarder and now turned rhythm DJ, they actually started at first because they were both skating together. Tanner was a skateboarder before going into dubstep. And they did it at a time. I was really, really heavy in the open format scene in Los Angeles. And so it was kind of like this funny satire of like being the opposite of bottle service culture, because that's what I was wrapped up in.
I like that. I mean,
seriously, because they would come to the clubs and sit there with all our skater friends and be like, what the fuck is this? Like, why? You know? And so it kind of came about that in that way. And Eric has a background in skate merchandising. And so really it was kind of this idea to do a clothing line. They had connections with the skate, like the stores in Los Angeles, like retail stores, like Pharmacy, Brooklyn Projects. I came on after leaving the open format scene and creating Wednesday as the third partner. And the label was always something that we wanted to work towards. It was something that I really wanted to do. And so that's kind of the disability of roles per se. So I'm the label manager, and then Tanner and Eric are on the merch and live side. We're kind of all on the live side, but merch is on their end. And so, yeah, for us, we really wanted the one-stop shop for artists. You know, we wanted, at first, 40 Ounce was kind of this avant-garde home for our friends who maybe were signed to other labels for a particular genre, but still wanted an outlet to release music. You know, maybe if they're known for rhythm, but they want to do tech house, or they're known for D&B, but they want to do future bass or whatever. Kind of evolved to us, you know, really finding like a 40 Ounce sound, which I think is very apparent in the releases we have. Then doing takeover shows, like we've paired up with people like Space Yacht to do shows nationwide. And so being able to showcase the talent on the label, and then Trifold being an outlet for artists to release merchandise, because that was something that we saw. There's a lot of merch companies. People can do merch themselves. But for us, we pride ourselves on like being made in Los Angeles, being high quality. You know, really, we know exactly what our numbers are so that the artists are really able to make it as much and maximize their profit. And so that's really what being with the 40 Ounce Cold or the Cold is all about, is kind of this 360 moment for up and coming artists, and also artists who, you know, already have a platform.
That's so dope. And Price took it into his own hands. He had like 40 Ounce bike.
Yes,
with his freaking dirt biking. I love that.
Yeah, and that's what's really cool, is that everyone, you know, for us, we say the Cult, and obviously we're far from very being very militant and regiment things, you know. So we like that people can have their own interpretation of what 40 Ounce is and what it means to them. And it, even going beyond just artists, even like on the fan level, guys, girls, you know, it's really cool to see the fan merch and the fan art that comes out of it. And so, yeah, it's been really, really cool to cultivate over the past couple of years, for sure.
I love that.
Thank you.
Actually, that's, I picked up some gear.
Yeah.
Next time you guys have a drop, let me know, because I'm
I know, we're going to have new Wednesday merch coming out for Valentine's Day.
Lord, I have the
I know.
Oh, super ombre. I have the sweatpants. I'm not this time. The sweatpants are great.
You wear them all the time.
I do wear them all the time. But today I've got the house music.
Evil Chicago.
It's an eagle up on the chat right now. You know what I wear all the time?
It's okay, you can't see anything because I'm wearing a black.
It's the earplugs. If I ever forget, I literally keep them in my car. Your guys, the earplugs. And so if my friends don't have earplugs, I'm like, protect your ears.
There we go.
There you go.
That's like the number one like kind of grassroots promotional thing that we've done, is just give earplugs to every single person that'll listen. Because you never know. They might be like, oh, what the, like, party safely, birthday party, what is this? And then they'll look us up. And then we get exactly three streams out of it.
I want to put a bunch into a confetti cannon at some point and just fire them into the crowded shows.
Sounds kind of
dangerous. Yeah, if I got blinded by an earplug at a show, I would literally delete you from my Spotify listening history.
But, like, if it just, like, if it's a little case like this, I've tried throwing them at people and it doesn't hurt. Just,
it's one of those things, like, with how heavy they are and the wind resistance, they reach a terminal velocity that's like not real quick. Dangerous. like a squirrel falling from a really large height. You know, a squirrel can fall from an infinite amount of height because of their terminal velocity. It's physics, you know. We're fine. It's fine.
Okay.
We went over this with liability.
He's an engineer. It's fine.
I love it. No, no.
How's the weather where you guys are? I'm in Florida, and the weather here is like garbage, and it's normally not garbage here.
Oh,
it's shit.
See?
It's so cold.
Tell me what garbage Florida weather is.
LA
raining
vibe right now.
Oh my god. Palm trees.
Palm trees.
Just makes me mad.
Taylor's overdue to be uncomfortably cold somewhere in the Midwest.
It's wait, so you haven't told me what shitty weather in Florida really means.
It's
so that I can laugh at you.
It's
overcast. It's winter here.
It's not even raining, it's just like not sunny and that's shitty weather. Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it's not perfect out.
It's windy here too.
Woe is you.
No, you know what's funny is I normally am so good. Like I'll check the weather before shows. And so I played in Dallas on Thursday. And in my mind, Texas is hot and hotter. And I get off the plane. I literally walk out to get to my car. And it was so cold. Ended up being like 32 degrees. And I didn't bring a jacket. Just didn't.
32 in Texas?
It was freezing.
Oh my God.
It was so cold. Big regret. Big L. So I
that
was like,
seems
wearing,
like
t-shirts over t-shirts to like stay warm. Like once we got to the venue, obviously it was cool, but it was regret. So always check the weather. Always
check
the
weather.
I feel like I always forget that too. Like that's the last thing on my mind. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I just expect something and then when it turns out not that, I'm screwed. Yo, this one goes to Brian and John. I want to know about how that collab with Adventure Club got started, because that's big.
Thank you. That one is really, really weird. And it's so crazy, like, that if you told this to us in, like, 2013 ourselves, who were, like, we are fully into Adventure Club back that, like, that time, like, we've always been, but, like, that was, like, the peak of it, I would say you're full of shit, and, like, I wouldn't believe that was happening. It was crazy. We just released a track called Rewind, which is a kind of
was it Hollaback Girl remix?
Oh, the Hollaback Girl remix, which kind of got a little bit of attention.
I played it out all the time.
Thanks, Boo.
That's probably our number one played out track. So they just like DM'd us out the bat, like new tune is a bop. That was all that.
That's the whole message.
New tune is a bop, and we're like, yo, thanks. We'd love to send you music, you know, shooting our shot as one does when you have ridiculously famous people in the DM. And so we sent them like a playlist of a bunch of stuff and they were like, hey, so our
man, like some of the stuff wasn't even finished.
Yeah,
like
some of it
was, like we had like a decent idea down that we could play out, but like, it wasn't like all done. And then, so they like their management, like sends us an email, like, hey, are you guys available for a call? Like at this time, we're like, I don't know what this is about, but yeah.
What in the world would they want to talk to us about? They were like throwing around some other ideas and then they were like, yeah, I mean, this one in particular, you know, the boys have been trying to do a house track and, you know, this one seems like a really good fit. You mind if they, you know, did some work on it? And it was kind of a really long process. That was like 2019.
Yeah. I got the call on January 3rd, 2019. Like, so it's been just over 3 years that this has been in progress. And like, it's been so hard not to like, just be like literally screaming it at people this whole time. Like,
I bet.
We put it in this Cannibalin radio mix that we did forever ago. And it was like, we asked if we could put it list as both of us. And like, you know, that's what we were hoping to be able to like release it before too long after that. And, you know, didn't really realize how like labels at that level, like how long they take to release sometimes. Cause it was like, it's coming out on Ultra. So like, you know, that just takes a while. And that's kind of the name of the game for labels of that size. And so like, you know, we put it out in this Cannibalin radio track list and, you know, people would like DM us like, yo, what's up with this? So like people kind of knew about it early. It got delayed past the point where it was supposed to be released. And so we asked them to like change the track list and whatever, cause we didn't want to like put out the impression that we were just like making something up. Cause like, if someone says that they're going to collab with X, Y, and Z artists and it doesn't happen after a certain amount of time, you're like, okay, were you just lying for clout or whatever. I talked to some friends that legitimately told us they thought we were lying for clout because it didn't come out. And I'm like, I don't blame you. It's pretty unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, it's finally fully announced on their end and previews and track lists and all that. So we're really
And I mean, excited. Like, so like Leighton played it out in their, what was it, their digital Mirage set. Like it's been in rotation like for a while. They did mention it like in our, I think it was in our Facebook group, like Leighton like hopped into our Facebook group and like confirmed it and stuff like probably in 2019. So like it's just been in progress for so long. It's like, it almost still feels like surreal that it's actually going to be out soon.
Yeah.
Cause it was one of those things that I just kind of like resigned to, okay, it might just never come out. Cause I know like collabs just sometimes get dropped and like, and then when they were like, okay, it's going to be on the album. Here's the album, like track list. It's got you guys on it. I'm like,
And it fits pretty well. Like right. The drop is kind of housey, but like all the instrumentation of it still sounds like very Adventure Club. They've got some of like the very on brand, like kind of bell type plucks and kind of melodic chords in the intro. So like, yeah, I think it fits well, despite the drop being like kind of bouncy birthday party sounding house track, right. With the intro and everything, which hasn't been previewed yet. It does fit really well with the album, the vibe.
Cool. What were you saying?
I was going to say, I think that's something really interesting to note for people listening or watching this, is that it's there's this crazy jump, I think, between like being an independent artist or an artist that's like starting out. And then you look at artists like Adventure Club or, you know, these huge acts that, you know, not only have huge label backings, but have these massive teams and all that. And it, you know, even for me, it's such a learning curve that no one like really tells you about. Like, they don't really tell you about that process in like music school or even like, even if you're doing your own research or like wanting to get into music, I feel like that's info that's like not really divulged of like how long sometimes things can take. And like,
you just learn it as you experience it.
Yeah. And I think sometimes too, even if you're the main artist on it, you know, sometimes you're at the mercy of these other factors and, you know, and then counting into like world things happening. And, you know, I've had plenty of releases where it'll be with major label and they'll give you a date and then I'll tell everyone about it and I announce it. And then I feel like a fool because it gets pushed 3, 4, 5, 6 months by nothing of my control. I didn't do anything wrong, you know? And right. So I think that's what's really cool nowadays about artists kind of taking a little bit of that power back with the ability of self-releasing or working with more boutique labels to, you know, they have a little bit more control over things. So I'm so happy for you guys with this release, but I, you know, it can be incredibly frustrating because you feel silly. You're like, I'm announcing it. I'm telling it. I want people to be excited. And then it doesn't come out. And then everyone's like, well, where is it? Where's the song? You know what I mean?
Were you full of shit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for that to happen for like, I mean, we just passed 4 years of birthday party. So like for 3 years of that, we've been waiting for this. Like, right. So like over 3/4 of the length that we've been doing this project, which to me feels like a fucking lifetime. Mm-hmm. Even though I know it's only been like, I don't know, well, I guess 4 years, but like it feels like it's been way, way longer because it's been such a big part of my life for those 4 years. Like it's, imagine not being able to like show somebody confirmation that like the thing that you're saying that sounds super unbelievable is
it
actually
is
happening.
Really unbelievable, to be honest. It still is, but you know,
for like 3/4 of the project and there's like, oh well, that's never happening,
but here we are.
Yeah.
And it's happening, and now you all know we aren't lying about it.
Yeah, I normally try to think of artists' music that like is coming out, say songs that came out this yesterday, Friday. Those songs were probably a reflection on the artist at least like 6 months to a year.
Yeah, even longer.
They
probably
made it a while back. You 100%. Know what I mean?
100%.
Okay, so, and you, can you, like, I want to hear from you guys on this. How many tunes do you have that are unreleased that you plan on releasing but feel old to you right now?
Oh, yeah. More than probably like a dozen, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Because,
yeah.
Like, you've made so much progress as a producer. Like, you've, even if you got, like, a whole different sound, like, of the stuff you're making now, you still have all these tracks that like are great and like you want to release, and that like Move It's one of those tracks for us, like where it's like I've heard it for so long. It's old news to me because I've been playing it for, I think we played a version of it, like an early version of it in our EDC set, like literally the first birthday party set.
Literally the first birthday party set ever.
And so it's just like, for me, it's like like that old track that I made it like so many years ago, but
you know what's gonna
it's
be cool
not even out yet. Like,
But once it is out, you're going to have new life breathed into it. You're going to have new people who are going to resonate with it. And that's what's going to be really cool. I mean, look at, like, if I look at, like, Heartbreak House, right? Like, that's really, it was my first, like, breakout single. You know, that song was written in 2017, came out in 2018. And there was a minute where I was like, if I never have to play this damn song out anymore, like, if I'm happy in a relationship and I'm like, I'm not salty anymore or I'm this. But the thing is there's so, you know, every time I play it, then I get another message either from a girl or a guy of like, oh, this helped me get through this. Or thank you so much for playing that. That brought me back to when I needed that song. And then I go, yeah, I'm never taking that song out of my set ever again. Or I'm not even going to play with that idea because it's a new experience. And that's going to happen to you guys. And it's going to be so fucking fabulous. I'm so excited for you guys.
Real quick, I want to say what's up to Burnout in the chat. Hey, Burnout.
Yeah.
The homie.
It's been recording.
Chris. Murdering it, actually. He just dropped a collab with Morgan Page, which is like
the so good.
Craziest flex that I didn't even think was going to. Yeah, what's up, man?
And like Burnout's one of our like newer homies. Like we just actually met for the first time like in real life, or we like really just connected at like just before Spring Awakening, and then at Spring Awakening.
He and I played back to back at the Don Diablo after party for Spring Awakening.
Yeah, I'm salty. I didn't
hear that.
I know.
Where was I then? What did I? Oh, was I just tired and old?
I think I distinctly remember having a specifically good excuse. I don't know what it was. It probably wasn't that good of an excuse, but I feel like I'm pretty good at not bailing on things unless I have like really good excuse.
But like,
it was
we probably
Sunday
should've...
night, so maybe you had work or something.
Oh yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah, I did not take Monday off, so that must have been it.
Probably.
But yeah, he just like slid into the DMs at the right time, and was like, I was like, oh hey, you're a Habstract tribute band. I'm a Habstract tribute band. Let's go.
Nice.
What were you gonna say?
I was curious because we were talking about Brian and John's like inception of Birthday Party. Mm-hmm. When did you start your Wednesday project?
So the Wednesday project that we know of it as now, like WENZDAY, I started that in really was 2018. I launched the project with the Heartbreak House EP. I was kind of doing singles here and there prior to that, just like really was just self-releasing too, which, and those tracks I don't even think are really out anymore. It was just kind of like to test the market before that. Mm-hmm. But I've always gone by Wednesday, even when I did open format. I just spelled it the right way, the normal way. I'm actually the right way, I'm the phonetic way. But so I've always been Wednesday. And I mean, I've had that name since I was 16. So.
What made you change it to the Z?
On a flyer, everyone would think I was playing on a fucking Wednesday. So first off, that was not the best. I'm sure you guys get that too with birthday parties. They think it's your birthday party, right?
Yeah.
But
you have no idea how many times like our people like come up to us while we're wearing like our jackets or our merch, like they're like happy birthday. I'm like,
are people tagging on TikTok when it's just their birthday?
And I'm like, no, it's not.
Anyways, carry on.
And then when I was doing my own like production and music, I wanted, you know, it needed a change, it needed to shake up. And so it was funny because I was coming up with all these other names, and then my manager at the time was like, why don't we just go with the phonetic spelling of Wednesday, which is the way I spell it now. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, Z's are cool. And this was like the era of like low step when like everyone had a Z in their name and their logos were super crazy. And so now it's just, I'm stuck with it.
Dope.
Yeah.
It works well. I like it.
I do too.
It does.
You know, and it's like, you know, maybe down the road I'll do, you know, a different project or do a different alias or a duo or something like that. And, you know, but, you know, I have a lot of attachment with this name, and I'm really proud of where I've come from in terms of DJing and that part of my life. And so I think, you know, if people look it up or they see that, it, you know, you see all the other things that I've done prior, you know, it all goes into what this project is and like why I write
music. Like DJing for Snoop Dogg.
Yes,
which I think is like the coolest accomplishment ever. Like especially in the EDM space, like how many people can say that they like DJ'd for like that Snoop asked them to do this his live stream. Like, well, that's so fucking cool.
We met, I did New Year's 2013 2014. He'd had like a club appearance, and I was the DJ. I was like their like headliner, whatever. So I,
this is pre-Z on Wednesday.
That's the first time. Yeah, this is normal weekday Wednesday. And so his team hit me up and they were like, look, he's coming. He's doing this appearance. And so it was like Backtrack DJ. And then fast forward, they were doing this charity event, the 12 Days of Snoopness for Dash Radio. And they were like, wait, we remember you. And so it was funny like how that full circle moment came about. And same thing. You know what I mean? Had I not had that history and done that, then I probably wouldn't have gotten that gig now.
you never know where the first impression is going to happen.
100%. 100%.
Exactly.
100%. Being nice to everyone.
100%.
I just made a TikTok about this yesterday, actually, or 2 days ago, because on Thursday I went to like this show north of Chicago. There's this company out there. They're my friends. They go by Web Life Events, and they do like Thursday events sometimes. Friend was playing, and I saw my friend that's like one of the guys that run the company, and we were just talking whatever, and he raised this up to me. I'd completely forgotten about this. It was literally the very first day that we met, and I think I was playing, he was just there at this club called Evil Olive in Chicago, and he was just telling me, he's like, yeah, you were just really nice, and we talked for like a good minute, and you like bought me a drink, and you didn't know me, and so I just thought that was like really cool, and like it seems like a small gesture, like, you know, like,
and like drinks, yeah. Well, I don't even
tipping in Chicago.
I mean, I think it was like back then, like Evil Olive, like was probably one of the cheaper places to drink. Like,
anyways,
I think it was like $8 drink, maybe.
Small gesture can like, and this guy's like booked us his birthday party once, and me as like my solo thing for like a bunch of times, and like that a really really good friendship and business connection off of like one seemingly insignificant first impression. And you never know. You just be, when you're nice to people without expectation, that's the difference between building relationships and networking.
Yeah. And I think if you look at all the biggest acts that are out there, it doesn't necessarily have to be EDM or pop or rap or whatever. It's a consistent thing you hear. Oh, that person's really nice. Or that person works really hard. Or that person remembers everyone's name. You know, I remember I saw an interview with Halsey, and she was saying that like she remembers all of her fans' names. I am a face person. I can remember faces. I'll know like where I met you. But she was saying that that's like something that she's like worked on. So she can like see fans and like even like years later remember their name. And you see how far that goes. You know, she had this very viral come up. And so it's just super important.
That's crazy. I'm the worst at names. So
yeah. I can like, if I see someone's face, I'm like, I can see, like, I can tell you.
Weed.
I can tell you like. All of these, like I saw you at this event,
me
and
too.
We did this together, and we were talking about this, but I can't tell you your name.
Yeah.
There's Jake Flores. I've forgotten his name for literally, like, probably 8 years. Like,
shout out Jake Flores.
Finally got it down.
Yeah, that's special.
Jake Flores.
It's just the weirdest thing.
By the way, I don't know if you guys saw, one of my early inspirations when I started listening to House actually popped into chat, Odd Mob.
The homie.
Yeah.
We love
him. I've never interacted with the dude, but I think in my first month of listening to EDM at all, like, I was listening to a lot of his tracks.
Oh, I think I've been listening to Odd Mob since, like, what, 2013, 2014?
Yeah.
Like, he just has so much, like, he's just putting out heaters. When I first started, like, especially getting the house music, like we're still like out at school and like DJ, like I was doing open format I did it for like a year on a Tuesday night, like just because my boss wanted me to, like, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, my boss, like I was the lighting guy at this like bar club, like that we had. And it was just like, well, we want to do something on Tuesdays. Like, do you want to DJ? I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, I'm not doing anything else on Tuesday nights. So
we've known him since way back then, and we've been, you know, acquainted. We did an official remix for him. And unfortunately, like right as the pandemic started wrapping up, he was in Chicago for a show, and his show was on the night, like the very first night that things got like completely.
Yeah, it was like that first weekend. I think it was the Sunday, and like things started getting canceled for the Friday.
That's crazy.
But then, so what ended up happening is I forget where he was, but he was like, oh, I'm going to have to I got to go back to Australia now, cause like all my tour dates are canceling. And he's like, oh, like I wish I could like come out to Chicago. And he's like, wait, I have to connect through Chicago anyway, like to get home. So I'm just going to fly up there and hang out. Like
you got to square him about for a couple days or a day or so.
That's nice.
Got to crank out a little collab.
And now Taylor, you answered this. Did you guys start as producers or DJs? And I figured DJ, Taylor, yeah. You started as a DJ, right? And then John, DJ.
So no, well,
John started as a DJ. I started as a producer, but it was very close, I think.
I mean, I was like making mashups before I was DJing, and then I was like, I got to the point with mashup making that I was just making like so that I could play sets. Where I was like, well, I can't really go any farther. Well, actually, no. I when we used FL Studio, like I made full songs, and that was way before I learned to DJ.
Yeah, because we've been playing instruments since like the third grade, And, you know, I was in like a kind of like cover band playing some low key stuff in high school.
I had a cover band too.
Hell yeah.
I had a cover band.
80s?
Hers way
cooler. That's so much cooler. I'm not kidding.
Was it?
We played like basic like 90s and 2000s like rock and country and pop and like, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, so like, you know, we played in the band, and then as we were moving off to school, like I didn't have anyone to jam with. I started like recording A Day to Remember acoustic guitar covers into Audacity, and then did like the FL Studio thing for a while, and you know, got pretty decent on that. And then like one day in college, I woke up after a night of partying, and I blacked out, and I had a sticky note in my pocket that just said the word Ableton on it. Cause I remembered kind of like halfway after that, like that I was chatting with some dude about production. He's like, it's telling me about this, like this application. I'm like, he's like, it's way better. You're on FL Studio. Fuck that. And I was like, okay, dude, I'll look into it. And now I get why Ableton people are like that, but no.
That's really
Cool. So I was like,
yeah, talk about a cult.
Why not that?
I'll tell Tanner. It's really interesting because, you know, obviously I have a sibling and you guys are siblings. And it's funny because my brother started producing first and then I was DJing and there was kind of this like swap. And I think that's really special. And I'm sure you guys can agree as well. It's cool to have someone who, one, you can bounce things off of and ideas off of. But two, when you're both kind of coming up and learning in a way, it's like this cool safe space where you're like, I know you're not really going to judge me too hard. You know what I mean? But you're going to give me good feedback and criticize what needs to be criticized. And I think, you know, I equate a lot of my success to that. And I think maybe you guys as well, you know, just having that support, you know, and I shout out to everyone who does it by themselves or, you know, doesn't have any support at all.
Oh yeah. I
can't even imagine.
Like, I'm so lucky that Brian like taught himself so many things. And then, generally the flow of how we learn new things was like, Brian would learn something, get okay at it, and then teach me immediately. And then I would it was just this constant flow of information, mostly one way. And so I've just gotten to benefit from him being a little bit better than me at production for the last 10 years.
No, 100%. I mean, that was, me starting out. I would literally like walk over and Tanner and be like, what do you think about this? He's like, that's a preset. I'm like, what? And he's like, okay, sit down.
How did you know? Why can't you do presets?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm so grateful for that because it was, you know, at first I was kind of like, oh, you think it's bad. Well, he wasn't saying it was bad. It was like, let me teach you how to remake this so that you can have that skill in your toolbox for things later on. Yeah. And so I'm so appreciative of that because I think that's what, you know, it's what sets my music apart or my, you know, my sounds is because you do take the time to learn that process, even collabing with you guys. You know, I think in any collaboration, you're learning about things and you do certain things in a way and you take those little bits. And it's how everyone gets better, which is really cool.
That's been a talking point on multiple episodes. Like, collabs are so, so valuable because you get new bits from every single person that you collab with.
Yeah, and sometimes I've had collabs where I look at the project and I'm like, oh, our brains do not work the same or think the same, you know, but at the same time, even if, again, you take a little tidbit or even just, you know, the process of working with another human being, I think is really important, especially as people who like to, you know, producers, we like to sit in a dark cave and be by ourselves and you know what I mean? And so just having that interaction and, you know, I think because of music, you know, I have friends from all over the world, which is insane. I could literally throw a dart at a globe and know someone or have been there because of music. And I think too, when you start to work with people from other countries or different upbringings, it not only makes you a better musician, but it makes you a better person, you know, and it helps you be able to relate to the fans and just have longevity in general, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's funny. On that point, I was talking to like my family. I went to Canada during a little vacation that I had after a while, and we were traveling together a little bit, and then we went back home, and we were talking about like, I don't know, different places, different countries, and I'm like, oh, I have a friend there, and they're like, what do you mean you have a friend there? You've never been there.
Right.
I'm like, oh, it's through music.
100%. I mean, we used to call our house dubstep dorms, and we would literally tell people this is back way pre-pandemic when Tanner and I were first coming up, and we would literally say like, hey, if you guys are in town from England or Canada or Asia or whatever, like stay at our house. And, you know, kind of the trade was, you know, we had a setup at home, we had our 40-ounce studio, and you know, it was, even if it wasn't necessarily a collab, it was like, let's sit in the studio and let's learn, and just being around people and chatting and talking about things, I think really, it was a really, really special time for us. And it was really cool. And now it's like, you see film festivals, you're like, oh, you slept on my couch for a long time.
There we go.
You know, but it's super, super important. And so if I can, you know, anyone who's watching or listening down the line, if you have the chance to collab, you know, and again, I think people put a lot of pressure on things and they think that, oh, if we sit down one time, it has to be something. You know, I've had tons of times where you sit down and nothing really comes over or doesn't get signed. And, you know, it may be a scrap, but then you circle back and you know, I've had collabs that we started that didn't work. And then years later, you know, so Dreadency is one of them. we did a song and then it just didn't click at that time. It was a collab with someone else. And then now, you know, I had something that's just on my own and I sent it in and it works. And so, you know, always stay open to it. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be right in that moment. You know, timing's everything.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So let's get on some of these questions. Odd Mob asked a question. What's your favorite way to start a song?
Ooh.
That's hard.
I'm a percussion gal. And I think it's my OCD, but I have to lay out percussion, even if it's a template that I've made. I have to have structure. I basically go percussion and then melody. That's really it. And then if there's lyrics, or sometimes I'll have like lyrics like in like a poem form, but I need like drums to be able to like keep myself on time if I'm like saying something or singing something. And then I feel like the melody comes after that. But that's not, I know that a lot of people don't work that way. Some people, they have this like tune in their head and they go from there. But I think it's also the DJ in me. Like, I like structure. I like being able to write a song that I know that if you hear it on an airplane or if you get it in your promos and you can easily mix in and out of it, it means that that person's right. going to play my song. So I'm kind of a stickler for that, which I'm actually trying to work on breaking out of that box for creativity purposes. But yeah.
Go ahead, boys.
So if I'm starting something, it's usually like, I'll have some like basic drums laid down, like just add a couple like drum loops that, like MIDI loops that we've kind of programmed and used in different projects. So I just like, I'll grab one of those and just start working like on literally anything else. A lot of what I do, like if I want to start something that's got any sort of melodic flow to it is like, I'll find some like music loops and throw them in like the Ableton slicer and try and like find something interesting there in the way that they work together.
John's usually really like experimental and doesn't go into things like expecting something or with something in mind. It, like he writes most of it, the things that he starts on a plane because he travels a lot for his job. Mm-hmm. We travel for music occasionally. You know, he's so lots of times on a plane, and he just got himself into the habit of like, when we're on a plane, I'm going to start something, and he'll just go in, you know, whatever the day is, and, you know, pull something together just like during that flight, because that's what he's done. And
like you have this finite window, like the short window of time of like, when the plane gets up to cruising altitude and before it starts going back down, that you like, it's like, okay, like, I only have this amount of time. Let me use it and see what happens. And then if I never use it again, like, who cares? Like,
just have to write it.
But then on the other hand, it's like, oh, if I don't use this, like it was like the time wasted. I couldn't have like, it's not like I could have done much anyway. Like, it's either like, I could have like played a game on my laptop or like listen to music, which are both like valuable, like stress relieving activities, but so is music. Like, and so if I like, it's like, oh, it's just time I gave up on a flight. Like, but on the other hand, it's like, oh, if I can finish something that like sounds decent in this like 2 hour window that I have while I'm flying from here to Denver or something, like that's how I've written all my best stuff. That's how I started our Holla Back Girl remix. That's how I started Move It. That's how I
the started. The one with Adventure Club.
Won't Let Go, which is
our next original after the Move It one.
A speed house track that transitions into D&B. That was two flights.
That was a two flight song.
So
a two flighter.
It was Chicago to Oklahoma City and then Oklahoma City to Denver, where I was going to visit some friends.
Yeah, so John's a lot more spontaneous, and you know, he'll get himself, like he'll just sit himself down and make something happen. I'm a little bit like more structured. I'll have something in mind generally.
He has, like, an entire song in his head, and if it's not exactly that, he's like, no, that's not right.
For better or for worse, because it makes me like a little bit less willing to like experiment on something if I had it like in my brain. You know, a certain way.
He's gotten way better about it though. He's really bad.
So like, I'll be like very formulaic and I'm like, okay, cool. Here's downbeat bass, rhythmic repeated motif, turnaround little melodic thing.
You're like
downbeat bass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so like that's kind of like a formula. It's like kind of the way my brain works. And I'll like have something written out in my head, and it's all about like, how can I get the idea that's in my brain? I'll be like, whatever the internal equivalent of beatboxing is, just like making the sounds in my head, and how can I get this onto paper quickly? And so like I set up like a lot of my sounds like ready to go with Ableton Live clips. So like drums and MIDI, which we've repurposed from old tracks. Like I can put them all in one thing or in a folder and like have them ready to go, already processed.
Super valuable, because then you can do all your panning, like all of your mixing, like have this entire mix rack and then just like drop it in. You don't have to worry about mixing your drums nearly as much.
Well, and when you do it that way too, like I saw another question was like, what headphones do you like on an airplane? Like I use AirPods. I have the Bose, the noise canceling headphones too, but when you do it that way, they're phenomenal. But when you do it that way, you're less worried about how, like you kind of already know how it's going to sound. So that way when you get off the plane or out of a situation, if you're in a car or whatever, then you're not like in for a surprise. You're like, oh my God, what was I just doing? So I think when you know your sounds and you set yourself up that way in an organized way, then you're more productive. And then what the stuff that comes out of that, I can't talk today, productivity, sounds better anyways.
Yeah, perfect. I like it. So like basically like setting up your tools, bases will like save bases from tracks that we've already done. Really useful for like fillers, because you can just kind of like inject something that already sounds like birthday party or whatever. You know, when you've got that content ahead of time, and it's all about like, when I have the idea, I want to know what it's going to take to get that at least arranged roughly on paper so that I can go ahead and tweak it until kingdom come. But like, you know, get the idea down before you like try and make it perfect or experiment to anything crazy. And you can always do that like later, once you've got like something down there, you know what I mean?
Brian's like the equivalent of he like is the guy that like brings his easel out to like by the pond and paint and like starts painting, like looking at the thing. And I'm like, he already knows like that's what it's gonna look like. And I'm full on Jackson Pollock, like let's see what happens.
We love an art reference.
There you go.
Hell yeah.
So I want us to do one more question before we have to go.
We'll do it fast.
Tripbox, a group out of LA. I don't know if you guys have heard of them, but they are like
Of course.
Dope. Yeah. If you were able to make music outside of electronic music, what genre or style would it be?
Pop punk.
Same.
Rock and roll, pop punk. I don't really listen to dance music, I guess, in my off time. I'm an emo kid, and I love, you know, it's why I worked with Mike Terry from the band Volumes. I have a lot of friends in various metal bands and things like that. And so I think if I was doing any other genre, it would be that, or even just eventually incorporating more live rock elements into my sets and music.
Dope.
Nope. I like that. I haven't had a eventful enough love life to get my heart broken too many times. It's been a while since I've been messed with. I have a very stable relationship, so like I don't have any emo shit to write about, really.
I'm just on brand in all aspects.
Unfortunately, she's okay. Over there. But like, yeah. So if it were me, I'd probably be making like kind of like pop. I like funk influences and like soul. Like
clearly obvious.
Lido is my absolute shit. I binge Lido all the time. I've also been liking a lot of like kind of like hip hop or like synthy influenced pop. So I might make some kind of like wave music type thing, hard wave or something more other than electronic music. So I can't do that.
Either,
whatever.
I would either end up in pop punk or synth pop. Or indie, like that indie dance, like where they're using the guitars still, but it's like, yeah.
Sensitive beans over here.
I love it. Before I got into EDM, I was really into, well, for my whole life before it, I was into prog metal and fusion jazz.
Yes.
So I was like a musical elitist.
Yes.
That's why it took like very feelsy, nice sound design, melodic things. Like my first artist that I was into was Chami.
Oh, nice.
And there we go. When I heard a Chami track, I was like,
hits you in the feels.
Oh, this is not that bad. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what got me.
A little bit of Promises, a little bit of Untrue.
Chami and Dr. Fresh are like the two artists that like got us from like straight up like electro house to there's other types of house music that are more interesting and deeper and
and use a little bit more finesse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And like, exactly. Isn't just
Bass
like
Trick in the chat. What's up, man?
Bass
Trick. Oh, my love. Hello. We're working on a collab. I love him. He's my friend. Yes.
Us next, please. Along. French bass house is top tier.
What is this? What is this hand but French? Like, what's the equivalent of that?
It's with a cigarette. No, there's something in the water over there. I don't know what it is.
But it's just that they have good
water. I've always said that French artists are and musicians are on another level, in my opinion.
Disco influence, love that.
Yep. Mm.
It's probably just that quality public education over there that actually values arts.
Yep.
There you go.
So now we're at the end, but at the end, I try to give you guys time to just like plug your label, Taylor, plug all your guys' music. So before we end, go for it. What's coming out? What you got going on?
Yeah, for 40 Ounce Cult, we have our first compilation of the year coming out next Friday. It's hosted by my brother, Jack Daniels. It's a dubstep compilation. And then next month, we will have our house, Death by House Music compilation hosted by myself. So follow us at 40 Ounce.
Oh, yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
I need to get Tanner on this because I had more 40 ounce questions that
let's do it.
We ran
you can
out
even
of
do us too. I know a guy.
Sorry, we talked too much.
I know where he lives.
You know a guy.
I know where he lives.
All right. And then for us, our next release is going to be a track called Move It.
We just put out a remix of The Assignment by Tay Money, like the song that pops up on TikTok. Yeah. So that's out.
There we go.
Go stream it.
Next release is going to be Move It with Adventure Club. It's coming out on their album on February 11th. So keep an eye out for that.
I feel like it's still the beginning of the year. So like there's stuff lined up, but it's hard to announce. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. I'm in
You're not allowed to talk about anything.
It's like, I have things to talk about.
If I tell chat, I'd have to kill chat.
One thing that we can announce is that our TikTok is popping.
Let's go.
But you get it all on Reels anyway. So if you're on Instagram, stay on Instagram.
Also follow us on TikTok. And then we've got a release after the Adventure Club release. We're going to be dropping it. It's Speed House and Drum and Bass in the same song.
You can't have both? Who says you can't have
who
both?
Who says?
I can.
What about you, Sol?
So, I hate when people ask. So my, I'm developing this side of my content. Now it's like two completely separate things that are attached to my brand, like my music, my own music. And then also another point that I'm growing a lot is like my shows outside of just my production. Like I just played my first Insomniac show, which is crazy.
That's great. Awesome.
Congrats.
And it was so dope. And that was like, I attribute that more to like my DJ reputation than my own music, but my own music's getting a lot of attention from certain labels that I can't announce yet. So I'm very excited for that. So it's a lot of stuff for my music production in the works. Artist Talk is like taking things by leaps and bounds. So I'm super excited for that. And then I think I'm going to be getting booked for a lot bigger shows as far as DJing. So that's what's going on.
We love it. We love
EDC main stage next year.
Yeah.
Well, we do have EDC Orlando. That's where I met Taylor.
Yeah.
And us.
It's in my home.
Oh, no, that was Tampa.
That was Sunset.
And it was cold. Orlando.
It was Florida. Yeah. I just knew it was Florida.
You lost your wallet.
Me?
Or ID. ID, John.
Okay. Yep.
John. Okay,
Sunset. I like get to the after party, like Brian's like, you went ahead of me. And I just like get there and I'm like, fuck. I can't find my ID. Shit.
I
walked 2 miles back to the hotel because I tried to call an Uber for an hour and nobody pick anybody up.
The phone wasn't dead, it was just a surge.
No, just nobody would even like, I was like, I'll deal with the surge, whatever. Like, nothing.
Well, you're here now.
You made it. You're a survivor. Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you for joining. This has been a great first episode. I can't wait till this airs live. And yeah, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate this.
Thank you for having
us.
It's so great to see all of you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for everyone in chat too.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Bye.
Questions, everything.
All right.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.